You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, David.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, thank you for having me. And good afternoon to the listening public.
Yes, go
This
ahead.
is Dwayne Devonish.
Yes, hi. Yes, Professor Devenish. You,
Yeah, Dr.
Dr.
Devonish. Yeah,
Devenish,
professor,
rather.
not professor.
Okay.
Hi, David.
You
I got
sent me a piece of correspondence. I didn't have enough time to read it, but is this piece of research that you've been doing?
Yeah, this is some research that I was recently doing. I've submitted a few articles to Barbados Today and to The Nation. One of the articles was run in the Sun yesterday, just to speak to the first category of articles. They spoke to the recommendations for the current testing regime that the country is currently using. And just to speak a bit about that, what I've articulated is a ramping up of the testing activity and behavior in the country, and taking into consideration random testing alongside the current model of testing, where the focus is on symptomatic, referred, or contact trace cases.
Yes. So
Now, the
you,
reason for that,
yeah, go ahead.
sorry,
Go ahead.
David.
You go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, right. So the reason for that is, as you would imagine, our testing behavior is really below par. And if we are really to understand the true state of this outbreak, we need to mix our testing regime to, take into account the potentially asymptomatic individuals in the population. But we can't focus on that, or we can't reach that target if we're only focused on the restrictive level of testing that we are currently doing. So we need to kind of ramp up that by including greater samples, random samples of the population, obviously sustainably, so.
And without that, you would say that it would be, dangerous to actually go any further in terms of reopening. What is your view on that?
Exactly. So the second article actually hinges on that, because what the second article spoke to is the fact that any reopening of the economy, social and economic activity, is dependent on the level of testing capacity that you have, which we will call your virus monitoring systems, as well as having a clear idea of the level of readiness in the economy. And this is readiness in terms of the public and organizations, right? And when we speak about readiness, we speak about how prepared both organizations and the public could be to operate on this new normal. Okay? But I would caution any rush of the economy until or unless we have clear, better information, a more accurate picture of the outbreak in terms, and that, again, as I said, that can only hinge on our ramping up, our upscale testing activity, right,
And
in the
many
country.
people feel that way. And the real question, therefore, is what are the challenges that the authorities are facing in trying to ramp up this testing? We knew they told us about the swabs, but in your judgment, I mean, looking at the size of this population and stuff, what would be a random sampling of? Of how many, what would you recommend in that regard, based upon your own experience in this field of testing, of sampling?
All right, so David, what I had recommended in the article was
Just before you go
to,
any further, some people, I didn't introduce you properly. You're Dr. Dwayne Devenish, and give your background in terms of what you do at the University of the West Indies.
Okay, so I teach general management, statistics, and health and wellness.
Okay, so against that background, the question stands. when it comes to the population size, what would you be comfortable with when you talk about random sampling?
All right, so David, so let me kind of preface this on the notion that there is a clear understanding that Barbados, like many other low to medium income countries, does not have sufficient capacity in terms of tests. We understand we have limited availability of testing resources, or because of that constrained capacity, it would not necessarily allow us to, you know, ramp up testing at the levels that the US or the UK and other high-income countries or high-capacity countries are doing. What I am proposing is that with the amount that we have, if you realize that our capacity is gradually increasing, as those capacities increase, we marry them with a particular strategy that we can use a proportion, okay, of, I'm calling for perhaps 70-30%. So 70% of your testing resources will be reserved for what we call the traditional restrictive testing for the symptomatic, you know, trace cases, severe, vulnerable, high-risk groups. But the 30% could be reserved for random testing across various different sites across the island so that you can spread out that demand and not have a situation where you have a huge number of persons going to a single testing site. All right? And you'll be able to obviously assign staff across those testing sites. Now, what I'm also saying for a greater efficiency, however...
We lost you. Hello? Yes, I think we got lost there. Let's see if you can get back to us. Dr. Devnish, you still there?
Yeah, hi.
Okay.
We call that the drop.
Yes, it did. You were saying?
Yeah, right. So to continue, what I'm proposing is a 70-30% split. But again, that is purely anecdotal. But I would imagine the experts will have a better split. And this, what I mean by this split is that what you're doing is that you are actually creating a percentage or taking a percentage of your testing resources, the larger percentage, 60-70%, reserved for testing as you normally are with the symptomatic, the severe cases, those cases that would have been revealed through contact tracing, and perhaps the 30-35% being reserved now for the random testing. Dominica, for example, has adopted a similar two-phase strategy where they are now moving towards random or what we call community-level testing. But this is, again, this is not at the level of other territories that have the capacity to do such. This is a gradual expansion or a graduated approach to testing using random principles. So that would be my proposal. Okay. As far as the actual numbers, that is something that depends on the quantity of testing resources. And when I say testing resources, I'm not just talking about swabs or testing kits. But remember, we also have to take into account the human resources, the persons who are trained to take conduct these particular tests. So oftentimes in our conversations, we tend to forget that testing resources include the human resources that we have available in the country.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Dwayne Devnish. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Hello.
Is this Sister Alice?
Yes, it is.
Yes, I would like to say that there's no elephant in the room. There's a monster in the room. And the monster in the room are the asymptomatic people. The people who do not show symptoms. Okay? You can do all the testing that you want. You are not doing 100% testing. You're still going to have these carriers over there. So my position is vaccine or cure. We have a lot of people at the University of the West Indies who do these, what we call systems and all that sort of thing. What are the people who do investigation of diseases doing? Do they know the effect of salt seawater on COVID? Do they know the effect of ganja on COVID? The effect of shark oil on COVID? Can they come out and tell us these things? What kills this thing? Because all the flattening the curve is mere joke talk. Oh, you could be testing point something of a population and telling people that you see a flattening curve.
You may be deceiving yourself.
You are deceiving yourself because the statistics will come from what people want. If a government wants the place open, they can use that statistic. If they want to put it in prison, like they're in prison now, they're going to use another statistic. Okay? So you keeping me from going to the sea. It's proven that virus cannot live in seawater.
Yeah, that's not proven.
Prove it to me.
That's not proven.
Can't live in seawater.
That's not proven. Don't mislead the public.
I did a lot of reading.
I am not aware that it has been proven.
In seawater, if the seawater is contaminated and it's in the contaminants that are in the seawater, okay, that is what all the reading that I did on it said.
As I understand it, up to now, there is nothing conclusive that says going to the sea will cure you of or avoid the onset of COVID.
Okay, and nothing says that it wouldn't either.
Well, but for the time being, we go with the position that there's no proven evidence that it will.
Yeah, but where we go with all these positions. But you can tell me that you can put me in prison, and then you can tell me that you opening the island, you carrying out talks with airlines, to reopen in July.
What would you recommend, my friend?
Well, my recommendation is going to be purely personal.
Let me
I
hear
cannot
it.
Have a recommendation for everybody.
Let me hear
but
it.
What I am saying is if people want to exercise, you can have restrictions on how to exercise, or it got to be one person only from a household at a time, or one person within 20 feet.
We're not dealing with the exercise area. We're talking about that aspect of it that will touch far more people. Business, reopening business, for instance, where how do you suggest that we deal with that?
Okay, well, I have a problem with reopening the country, the island, because we are an island that we have never prepared ourselves. We went with this model that we can't feed ourselves, which is complete folly, right? We can't feed ourselves. We can raise enough vegetative matter. We can raise enough animals on Barbados to feed animals. This is a last resort. This is going back where nobody has money. Okay, we have a government that tells you, oh, don't panic. I'm in full support of this government. Okay, but when you come and tell people, don't panic, don't this, don't that, and bills still coming. Bills are constantly coming. You have to say, okay, shut down for a year can cost us, what, $400,000 Barbados dollars if we give every household $600 a month to buy food, or $400 a month to buy food. There has to be a extreme position, and then work from there.
And what's that extreme position?
The extreme position is that the government pays for everything until we find a cure or a vaccine.
Of course, okay, you assume that the government has the money. Isn't the government taking that money from us to be able to do all those things?
I agree with that, but you have something called foreign reserves.
Foreign reserves? So you could take up foreign reserves and use them like that? You,
if they're used, man,
you will take it for our reserves and use them that way.
But you can take it up to reopen it.
You can't justify. You can, but I don't know about taking foreign reserves to pay.
Reserves to
I know that Barbados, notwithstanding all that's said about COVID, Barbados is still in a program with the International Monetary Fund.
Yeah,
so which means that you can do as you like. You have to consult with them on that sort of thing. But nobody, listen, Barbados has had relatively few deaths in all of this so far. And as far as I'm aware, I haven't heard that anybody in Barbados has died because they didn't get food. All right, please. In discussing these things, we need to be very careful that we are not alarmist. That we don't, yes. Yeah, I'm very
more alarmist than telling people that they cannot live the life they want. Is there something more alarmist than that?
All right, sir. Let's move on. Have a good afternoon. Down to Brass Sacks. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Oh, well, listen, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
I have a quick question. In March, early March, I visited my ophthalmologist and was prescribed glasses, and I was supposed to get them in 2 weeks. Now, because of COVID restrictions, this is 5 weeks I don't have glasses, and the old ones are closed, and the lab is closed.
A lot of people in that position.
I'm wondering if the government, you know, from listening to you, if some government official or something could realize that this is also an emergency, because we really can't see without them.
Yeah, so you see, that's what I was talking about earlier when I said there are other consequences that don't really come into focus very easily. And this is one of the consequences.
Okay.
People, right. You know, well, there are a lot of people who walk about with the hearing conditions that they didn't want to have them like that for so long, you know, especially the women. They got some friends of mine who haven't had a haircut for so long. It's all part of what I have to go through.
But something like glasses, because my
it's important.
You understand?
Yeah.
I think it is an emergency, as far as I'm concerned. If they could just let them do the ones that they have and let me get my glasses.
But you've got to get somebody who is willing to come and be as close to you as fitting glasses and that sort of thing. Not the people who have to get their eyes examined and that sort of stuff, they don't want to be so close to each other.
I agree. Mine was fitted, it was there, and everything. All they had to do was deliver it to me within 2 weeks.
Okay.
And it ran out. So the time ran out because of the COVID. So I just wanted to know if somebody could get those glasses out to, you know, to people like me. That's all.
Yes, okay. Sorry to hear about your situation. Down to brass tacks.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, please. All right, I just want to add my 2 cents worth. Someone had called sometime last week about zone, when they were talking about alphabetical, giving you the alphabetical time to come out, and someone had talked about zoning. I was thinking that the constituency offices, 30 of them, I think they have been set up based on the amount of people in Barbados, something like that. So,
there's a lot of wind blowing into your microphone.
Oh, okay. Is that better though?
Yes.
Okay, fine. So I was thinking the government is doing a good job managing this whole thing, but it would be good if they could probably think about micromanaging it through the constituency of, you know, and also
to achieve what though? Because
you have 30 members and you have 30 constituencies. You can, the whole thing of these care packages and all those things, it's not that they don't have them, it's they don't have the staff to disseminate them to the people on time and so on.
Okay.
You know, and also you have, if something happens, you know the demographics of the particular area. I heard the doctor talking about testing, random testing of 30%. You could probably test within each constituency and so on and things like that. So, I mean, you can utilize the constituency offices to do a lot of the things that they have instituted at the macro level, but they need to have it done at the micro level.
Well, for you, it is important because you want to deal with the distribution aspect of things in a more efficient manner, in a quicker manner. Because you believe that's where we are falling down most of all?
Yes. You need government needs help. And so you need to get the other members of parliament, you have to get them working, and they're willing and able, and that is a good source. It don't only have to be them, but they could oversee their section of the community, just like and I think the lady that called last week, I think that time the gentleman from Calta probably thought that she was going to say you could only shop in certain areas, but you could shop all over Barbados, but you need to have I feel a zoning.
Somebody says that if you go in that direction, you will end up politicizing it.
Yeah, but then they could just like how she bring in Owen Arthur and Chris. She could bring in other people. The constituencies could bring in other people. Have it as a board. Even the churches.
Well, I'm curious.
They should be utilized as centers.
I'm really curious about what this unit that she spoke about with Mr. Sinclair and Mr. Arthur, what exactly is it doing? Up to now, apart from that announcement the evening, I don't think that we've heard anything further about that particular unit, and we don't know its terms of reference. We know nothing more about it. And I do suspect that the Prime Minister has been getting a lot of negative feedback on that particular announcement, so that having made the announcement, I think it's important for us to hear something soon about what it is doing.
Right? I agree, but one of the things is we have Maskell, Dr. Maskell, and we have other academics. It is wanting to be an academic and one who is actually do hands-on. And you have that in Chris and you have that in Onapa. I'm not of support of this party. I mean, I support them and what they're doing, but I can understand if this is, I can't think for the Prime Minister, but I can see if he has his knowledge, because he has commanded.
Who's that?
This is Chris Sinclair, as former Minister of Finance, and also in AFA. So they have hands-on, actual, practical experience to do with.
Come on, let's be realistic now. Come.
All right.
I think you have to deal with this in the context of track record, national track record. And when you look at the track record, then you are going to find that one has a lot more support than the other, because Mr. Sinclair had a very difficult time as Minister of Finance. And the very Barbados Labour Party administration and the party itself, led by Mia Motley, exploited all of those weaknesses. So it's very difficult for many people to understand how you could go all the way down the road to the point where the man lost his seat. And now you are going to say that you are going to bring him back in that capacity, when all that you said suggested that his policies did not work. So what expertise are you talking about when you look at it from that angle? And there are, listen, it has nothing to do whether you like Mr. Sinclair or not, you know. It has to do with the track record. That's what we have going before us. Mm-hmm. So you are the one saying that it is justified. There are those who say, oh no, there ain't no justification for this one at all.
Well,
so how do you respond to that?
I leave that there. As I said, there is a difference between being theoretical and being practical. You know, they have entrepreneurs who I have learned from, who have failed, and because of their failure, I saw progress. Anyhow, leave that there. I want to talk about within the lockdown. I feel that there can be some ease. Until they have decided what they're going to do, they can ease the program within the lockdown. And that, you know, you must allow people to exercise. A lot of people still think, David, that they cannot come out of their house. You can walk around your house within the curtilage of your property, and you can exercise. Exercise is very important, all right? And also, what else I wanted to say? Right, so basically, that's what social, and also, I what the gentleman was saying about the beach. I'm a beach person. I can't go to the beach, but I can understand that, you know. But you have to find some laxity within the lockdown, what we're going through it, you know.
Okay. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good. Now, what I would like to say is that we are in serious times of today. Right now we are into what we call the aquarium age. Now we between what we call the species age and the aquarium age. When Jesus was on earth 2,000 years ago, we were in the species age. Right now the sun moving to the Aquarius age. In other words, the sun is in Aquarius.
So how, when you recognize all of this, how would you live your life to make sure that you line up with the age of Aquarius?
Well, this age starts from back in the 60s. And every age, it takes about 2,100 years.
No, you answer my question like a politician. I ask you one question and you answering something else.
No, I get it. Go ahead.
I ask you, how would you personally adjust, or how have you adjusted your life when you realized that you were in the age of Aquarius? What does that require of you?
Well, once you understand, the age is a more spiritual age. It is an age whereby one got to lift the spiritual level of vibrations. One got to do think different.
How have you changed your life?
Oh yeah, but well,
or
but
how much more? How much more change you need to make now?
No, not now. But years ago, I tried to live my life according to certain principles and guidelines.
Such as?
Right. Well, you know, you try to be more spiritually inclined. You read your books and understand how to boost your level of understanding.
But you don't read the Bible that much. You read books rather than the Bible.
Books and the Bible, both. Okay. And then they could actually align the dots.
What advice you would give me now then?
Well, what I would say is that what is happening right now is that we got to live with it. Because right now you're getting the planets, like Mars, Saturn and Jupiter, lining up.
So what I got to do with me? How are you going to do? What I got to do?
Wait a minute. When these things happen, you find that there's a lot of vibration now hitting Earth. So in other words, you get a lot of radiation now from the sun hitting Earth. And that is where you find that they had the lockdown. And that is where you can go to the beach. Because the radiation from the sun is so heavy.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was because we have COVID.
Yeah, but caused COVID.
All right. Let's come back to that another day, all right? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Okay, it's the second time I've been speaking to you. I speak to you once before, but that was in a crisis. To help others, I know. I want to take you about earlier.
There's a crisis, too.
When they had the... putting up, you know, the funds to help other countries. But we don't want to mention that. I don't even know what it is. Let me speak to you. I don't want to, you know, get too far about that. I want to take you back to the hotels and the lady that called in. She was speaking about opening back in and the hotel shop opening back in. Mr. Ellis, I work at the hotel that the name is in the paper. I was a short there for about 22 years. I went to the same school that you went to. I opened the school and I leave at 11 years from that school, where then I was falling to arms with people like Orbit Silly, and Levere Richards, and those guys from the union, and become, I would say, very good in the union. Because whatever you want your mind to be, you can build yourself to be. Mr. Richards, I worked at a hotel, and I leave and went on to as an officer in the Bridgetown Port. I actually retired early, I was to work at 65. And if I tell you 2 Sundays ago on my birthday, you would know that I opened the school, because you would know when Ellis they open. Mr. Ellis, what hurted me is when people would come and speak about hoteliers. Mr. Ellis, we have men here, predominant men, that can work any part of the hotel. I was a shop steward in the hotel. I worked with management, and I worked with the workers. And there was only one dedicated. I don't want to call my name, nobody would hear my name. We always try to overlook. We are pussyfooting here to bring people over the workers in Barbados, Mr. Ellis.
But why? What is
we
it?
We fight, Mr. Ellis, I fight against that because at my hotel, the same corporate school, we call the name, and I work at San Antonio, see? People don't like me because I fight for the workers. If I use this to even like trouble.
Let me try to get some better appreciation of why this trend takes place.
Is it based on color?
What is it based on?
Yeah, Mr. Ellis, you got it right. I may start to call some chef now. And he could talk to you off.
I've been going through this here for years, you know. This discussion has been going on here for years.
Thank you.
It is not new.
2017 and even now.
If you're running an establishment.
Remember,
Mr. Ellis. Yeah. Those. I'm dealing with the general picture here.
All right.
Of what happens. But why is it that. Well, hold on. It is not just hotels either. Why is it that people opt to bring in others from outside to hold jobs that Barbadians could have? And they are not allowed to do that until and unless the authorities say yes. As I understand it, they have to prove to the authorities that there is no Barbadian qualified to do the job. Agreed?
I quite agree with you, Mr. Ellis, but right. I will say that is not working very well in Barbados.
And if not, why not?
I don't know, Mr. Alice. You know, I will be like at the bottom of the table. I you know, have people above me that will know why it ain't working. And these people, I tell you, even if you could make that grade, the people could shift it good enough that you cannot get in. Because we got, and I tell you, because we work enough of them, I know what you're talking about. It says start from Washington Park for 3 months. So I didn't start with Washington Park. I went up fast. So I know where I come from the bottom. So I'm telling you that we got people certain positions, Mr. Ellis.
Well, that is also influenced by government policy. And governments over the years have claimed that they have been interested in protecting the interests of the Barbadian worker in that regard. They've put things in place. But for whatever reason, I can speculate as to some of the reasons why that may be happening. But as you have said, no matter what we've put in place, you still get the complaints. I mean, you see some messages sometimes in the newspaper, some notices asking for people in areas that you say, but we need to tell me for all the people that we have qualified in this country, nobody can do that particular type of job.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
And how on earth could anybody in their right mind believe that a majority of Barbadians would see a notice like this and accept that it should have been put in the newspaper in the first place? I mean, it takes a lot of gall to actually put a notice of that nature out there and say, listen, I want to import someone to do this job. Now, I don't know, what we don't have is the statistics coming from the Immigration Department about how this thing has changed over the years. In the interest of transparency, I suppose it would be useful if you could actually see how many of these, not the details, but how many of these applications are turned down per year. We also need to see what mobility there has been for Barbadians as a result of the policy that was implemented some time ago, which said that you needed to have this thing put in the newspaper to justify being granted permission.
I'm hopeful there, because it's a fact. When these people come, you know, the top of the door man used to get all the cat men used to get it. But when they leave, the same people that them under them, just next to them, got to do the work that ain't getting any money. That's all it is.
Oliver, I'll say to you though, the academic qualification is not all that is required. And you know full well that in many other aspects of life, Barbadians complain about the quality of service that they get. And you need to be able to tell me that that is not a factor too in the tourism sector.
Well, some of that, you will get that some wherever you go.
Okay, there you go.
And you will get some of that. I do a lot of touring, see? So you'll get some of that all over the world. But I'm saying, in the days when it was, I was a hotel here, it was Malik, cat nurse, and when you go to hotel school and do certain things, they had a lot of training, Mr. Ellis. You understand me? And Mr. Ellis, it was not, no, Mr. Ellis, the people see you 6 months a year, we call a season, and 6 months up where you're working, and if you're paying rent, you still got to go and scramble, go in and pick fruits, or go and go factory around the track. You understand me? Because you know, you want to support your family. Because I got my children. I know I come out too hard life. And I made certain that I love them for. I make sure that I love them. You understand what I'm saying? So I had to do a lot of things. It didn't only at that work. I went over here before we started ready. You may hear the phone already, but start talking. Because I fight for those people, because I know people bring people ahead of those people all the time. But I want to leave that there and touch my rent real, real fast. I don't know if Mr. Wickham listened today to the program when the gentleman called you earlier on. I didn't hear all the program and told you his daughter, you could correct me if I'm going wrong.
She rent out a house?
Have a place rent out. Yeah. Have a place rent out. And she called her tenants about the rent. And the cursor, you...
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
You heard that? Well, Mr. Ellis, that is something that I called and spoke to Mr. Wickham about. I don't have that type of tenants around me. I must say, but I got the fee for other individuals because when they shoot Panama for He just feel that burning. I go through to take, no, you go and take it off. He ain't take it off you. The fact remains, right? People all around here now trying to use that just to stop bearing. But nobody can just live in anybody's house and curse them and still live in the house. But and as I tell you, I don't have that type of people. But listen, right? When vegans put things in place, we got to put it in place for them and those here and there. Not only for warm people, because people will use them things around you. And what got you? You'll be paying your water bill, like bill. You're paying your internet for them, and it's well furnished. And there we're bringing the women in and out. In and out. But they can left on your gates, though. They can left the women on your gates. So you just getting killed for nothing. But I don't have a weapon of it. So I hope that you listen and see. Yeah, there's a lot of landlords now getting a lot of trouble through that. And the people will never back pay. When it is the ban is lifted, what the people going to do? Look for some places to go and live. What they might do with you is drop your key or somebody's carrying the key with you. And you've got to change your luck. Thanks, Mr. Ellis.
All right. Thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks. It's 1:47 going until 2 o'clock. Hello.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. I was at home and I jumped in the car to go and do some shopping. I heard one of your callers and prompted me to call. I'm a listener, but I'm not a caller. But his comments prompted me to call. And it speaks to a mentality that we are seeing in this crisis that me personally, I have never seen before. And I heard the caller mention that he was a prisoner in his house, at home. And I'm thinking, how could you be a prisoner in something you build, buy, or rent? But he's a prisoner, the caller's a prisoner because he can't get to go to the beach. That's what it sounds like to me. Because from his research, it says all of these things, whether true or false, about the water. But then it reminded me, and this is why I call, it reminded me that, I don't know if you, I guess you've been watching the press conferences that they had, that the government has been having, whenever they have them. And in the comments, no matter where it is, IG, Facebook, YouTube, whatever, in the comments you see one thing over and over all the time. Then you're going to start back selling rum. Rum, alcohol for sale. Chefette opening now. And it's like, I am wondering if we understand the seriousness of this thing. To over two million people have caught this virus, approaching a million people in terms of death. You talk about the five people that Barbados had as a low number, but it's five people. And if left unchecked, it could be more. So how do we get this stage as a people that we think that our own little bubble is all that matters?
Well, you know, we are different in our response to crisis and to other developments in the country. There are people out there who feel that this lockdown has got them feeling like prisoners in their own homes. There are people who really wish that they could at least go for a walk around the place, but they can't do that right now because, as you know, the lockdown is aimed at trying to keep as many people off the road as possible and to avoid the kind of contact that has the potential to spread this virus even more. But that doesn't stop people from feeling so. And I think in a lot of this, we also have to be kind of sympathetic to people and to appreciate how the human mind works. Sometimes rather than just being so critical of the people and beating up on them, it is to say, yes, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, while I sympathize with you, I still want you to do the best that you can to stay behind doors and stay home. But there are people who, you know, a lot of the fellows who lime with one another and stuff. Yeah, women who love to go to the hairdresser and sit down and talk about themselves, talk about others and that sort of thing. They miss that. They miss that contact. They don't feel right. But you just got to stick it out for a while longer because you're trying your best to look after their health and the health of the other people that they love. But don't beat him, because he doesn't see it your way. He is frustrated, and he is representative of several other people out there who feel that way. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hi.
Mr. Ellis, I think the government of Barbados is doing a fairly good job with the coronavirus. Right, watching international news, I quite satisfied. But I got real serious problems with the Prime Minister on finished statement relevant to landlords. Mr. Hines, it is ridiculous. It is unfinished, and I think she needs to get back to the mics as soon as possible and let the people know that it wasn't intended for her to stop paying rent. I'm a victim of that, Mr. Ellis.
I can hear the emotion. Yeah.
Out of six tenants, Mr. Ellis, they don't even come and see it. They're making an agreement. They didn't tell you, well, nothing to just, they're up, they're gone. And that's it. And that's it. Mr. Ellis, people are stalking.
Well, of course, about, you know, you can see a lawyer.
But yeah, but people just talk about business, and this is a fact. I was a renter years ago, back in the 70s and all down there. But business here, and I used to take care of people's houses, paint them, pay to the rent and everything. But Mr. Ellis, the last thing that business like to do, and that's for, not 100%, but for a lot of them, is pay rent. They will change the car, they will bring a letter, they want internet, they want digital, they want everything. But not rent, Mr. Ellis. They're here to pay for what to live, for where to live. And I think it's really sad. And I think the...
So you think that the Prime Minister made a tactical error?
Yeah,
I think... When she spoke about it in that way and just left it up in the air.
That's it. It's very unfinished. It's very, very unfinished. And I think that she needs to come back, because people believe in the Prime Minister as known. And frankly, she said that, they say, well, we ain't got to pay nobody no money. And all kinds of stuff, Mr. Ellis. And sometimes, like, you go up, furnish apartments and take everything inside the apartment, concern you, washing machine, stove, fridge, everything, and paying water and everything, and they're living free. It's unfair. It's really, really unfair. I think some people, and to me, the only way to get anything in Barbados is if you've got an organization. And I like how you call in for the Landlords Association to come together. There, people have cursed landlords, but they got some bad landlords and they got some good ones. And you know, you if you love your place and like your place, you will see after it, and you will go out and think. But it is tough, Mr. Ellis, with the people, the stance that here.
Okay. Let's take one more call. Down to brass tacks.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Mr. Ellis, this is Mohammed Nasser. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good. I called, I know I'm late now, but I called make a suggestion. You remember, I called before, so I know the timer. You remember when the right expert, Aaron Barr, said that the worst company was making, was having real money to take some from it?
You're breaking up. I can't understand exactly what you're saying. Yeah, the right excellent Errol Barrow said what? That which company?
That the Waterworks were doing very well, and it has a lot of money, it's going to take the money from it.
Yeah, that was an error. Everybody recognized that.
No, I don't know why. So the right excellent Errol Barrow said, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. When the Waterworks was managed by the managers and the board of directors or so, we have never been having the problems that we have in Waterworks now.
How long ago was that?
Well, that was a long time ago.
Okay. Right? A lot has changed since then.
A lot changed since then. But I am telling you, when it used to be managed by the managers, and the talk would be from the managers, they're from the ministers, and this is nothing to do with this government or the other government, talking about a series of governments. From the time the ministers of this country have been given maybe this extra power or extra authority, we've been having trouble with a lot of things. That doesn't stop the minister from being in control. But the point is that I think that we should let some of the talking done directly to the management of these companies unless...
No, you see, you want to... Yeah. If you want to go there, fine. But I will also say to you that the point on which you began is a significant premise from which we should start the discussion about what has happened at the Water Authority. There was a time when it was a department of government. It was not a statutory corporation. And what happened when they diverted the money that really should have been pumped back into the distribution system and all of that, when that was taken out, it, from what I gather, left the Barbados Water, we call it Water Department at one stage. Water Works is what we call them, Water Works. It left them at a considerable disadvantage. It was there, I suppose you can say that over the years, the amount of money that has had to be pumped back into it by central government has more than made up for that. Like I would concede that. But at the time, it could have made a significant difference. And I don't think that you can look at it only from the point of view of the political dimension to this. Mr. Nasser, I remember only too well all that was said about the Water Authority back in the 80s and the 90s, when the Water Authority was seen as virtually a law unto itself. Nobody wanted to touch it. Everybody was afraid. And I think we're paying a price for that too. All right? People couldn't speak about the Water Authority and its inefficiencies because they were afraid that they would be lambasted in the country. And all of that created a monster where people could tell you time and time again about some of the behavior that they saw among the Barbados Water Authority people at the time. We now have to add other issues to that, and we have a real crisis on our hands with respect to the management and the delivery of water in the country in a drought situation. I want to thank you all very much. This has been Down to Brass Tacks, the Monday edition for April 27th. I'm David Ellis. I also want to thank my producer and technical operator, Michelle Brathwaite. Do have a great afternoon.